To see you here bright and early in the morning. I appreciate you, well, leaving bed, frankly, and getting here so early. It's pretty early to come down into this dark, dark room at the bottom of the building, the crypt, where we work with Expression Blend. If we've not met before, my name's Mike Tolte. I work for Microsoft in the UK, and I've got all of my contact details on the slide, so you can feel free to jot those down and use them at some point if you want to mail me, if you want to tweet at me, if you want to find my website. And if you want any of my slides and things, that's the bottom link on the very bottom of the slide. We're going to talk for about 70, 75 minutes about Expression Blend this morning. And really, it's a bit of a risky thing to do this, but the intention of this talk is really to try and introduce Blend, talk about Blend for people who don't use Blend every day, who are kind of less familiar with Blend. My basic question is that you? Are you people who use Blend all day, every day? Are you people who use it at all? A few. Okay. But mostly no. Okay, so that's fine. That's going to be good. That should be about right. A quick word on the screens. There are screens dotted all over the place here. The room is not completely full, so Blend, if you've used it, you'll know, eats screens for breakfast. And so get yourself, you probably already are really, get yourself a good view of a screen because we're going to spend most of our time actually working in Blend. We're not going to spend most of our time working in PowerPoint. So the screens, hopefully you've got good visibility. The only thing I'd say about these screens at front is it can be a bit difficult the further back you get to see the bottom of the screen. So just make sure you've got visibility of all of the screens. So really where this session comes from is I'm spending a lot of time with Silverlight. I'm spending a lot of time with developers in the UK. And I talk to developers who are working with Silverlight, and I often find that they've almost developed an allergic reaction to Expression Blend. I talk to them about Blend, and they say, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't use it. And you kind of think, oh, okay, that's interesting. And perhaps some of this comes from, in the early days, Microsoft saying, Expression Blend is a design tool. If you're a developer, you really don't need to look at it. You really shouldn't open it. Don't worry about it. Don't go anywhere near it. This was an interesting message of Microsoft's for a while. It never quite worked for me. And the two things that I kind of thought about this was, well, I've not, never going to be, never have been. Well, that's interesting. That was quick, wasn't it? Should we start again? Never have been any kind of designer. It's simply not my skill set. I'm never going to be able to do that kind of thing. But when I think about my own experience, I find myself using Blend an awful lot. So I'm in this category of people who really falls into the category of developer, but I spend a lot of time in Expression Blend, usually with Visual Studio and Expression Blend open at the same time. That's kind of how I work quite a lot. So I thought, well, what is it that I do in Expression Blend and why do I use it? And can I try and communicate that across to folks who are not really working in Blend today? So that's what we're going to do in the session, really. And I will take an approach of kind of starting from scratch to some extent. And what we'll do in terms of spending our time is we'll spend 15 or so minutes just doing a quick walk around the environment, just in case people have perhaps only run Blend once and never gone back to it. So we'll do a little bit of that. We'll spend 25, 30 minutes looking at things that I think Blend does really well that Visual Studio either doesn't do at all or does to a lesser extent. So there's some things in there like resources and styles that Visual Studio really does some bits of, but it doesn't do it as well as Blend. So those are reasons why I would drop into Blend today and use Blend rather than Visual Studio. And then we'll finish up spending the last 30 minutes or so just putting together a very simple screen inside of Blend and trying to reinforce some of the things that we've done in the other bits and pieces, just to try and show some sort of real-world element. We'll take a class library from Visual Studio that's kind of developed around the model view, view model pattern. We'll bring it into Blend and we'll put some UI around it to a limited extent because I have limited abilities, but we'll work it out in Blend as we go along. So let's switch straight over to Expression Blend. Appreciate it's early, but if we want to talk about a tool, we really need to run it. And let's just do a lap around the environment first. Let's just spend a few minutes talking about Expression Blend. The one thing I'll say to you about Blend is that, as I said earlier on, Blend loves resolution. Blend loves monitors. If you've got two monitors, Blend's going to be better for you. If you've got three monitors, well, you've done very well indeed, and Blend's going to even be nicer on those three monitors. It loves real estate. It loves monitors. And so the one thing that you should never, ever, ever agree to do is a public presentation with expression blend on a low-resolution screen. Okay, never agreed to do this. It's really fiendishly difficult to use on a low-resolution screen, which is exactly what we're doing here today. So let's start off with the very basics. Of course, Expression Blend and Visual Studio share a solution structure and a project structure. There's no import and export. So of course, in Expression Blend, I can go and open projects and so on. If I pop to my desktop, find a project. Let's open this one. I deliberately chose it. Let's just close down the artboard for a moment. I deliberately chose it because this project is under source control. And Blend does have limited integration with TFS from the point of view of source control. And the first window really will bring into the environment. You'll notice my environment is looking very uncluttered right now. Blend rarely looks like this. Let's just bring in the projects window over here. And really, this is the Solution Explorer from Visual Studio. You can kind of look at it as comparable to that. Notice that because we've got items under source control, we get source control integration. I can go and do stuff with source control, get latest versions, get specifics, check out, view history, and so on. It's the standard dialogues you expect from Visual Studio stroke TFS. And of course, we can go in here and we can add new projects or existing projects and websites and so on. We can build, we can edit in Visual Studio, something that I find myself doing quite a lot. We can go to a particular project and we can add new items. Interestingly, this is not the same dialogue you get in Visual Studio. There are some additional things, there are some removed things. It's a little bit different. Things like actions and behaviors and triggers don't show up in Visual Studio, for instance. But we can add new items, of course. We can add references to .NET assemblies and so on and other projects. The add reference dialog in Blend is nowhere near as capable as the Visual Studio add reference dialog. It can be a bit disappointing from a developer's perspective. One little trick that I use is I've bundled all my Silverlight assemblies into a Windows 7 library. And it makes it easy to find all the Silverlight assemblies that I might want to reference. So you might want to use that as a bit of a trick. I certainly use that. Blend, of course, can also create projects. It can't create projects under source control. So just a word of warning there. You need to put the project under source control first. Blend won't create in source control. So we can still go create. There's no tick box for adding to source control here. I'm going to focus on Silverlight mainstream here at the top. Most of what we say here will also apply to WPF and a lot of it to the phone as well. So it's kind of the same tool across all of them. And let's just go make ourselves a new Silverlight application to play with. And the artboard opens on our main page .xaml over here. I'll come back to the artboard in a moment. The next window probably you would introduce into working with Blend would be the assets panel. The assets panel really is your toolbox from Visual Studio. So all of the controls that we've got to play with are here, and we can work with those things. You can also use the tools window over on the left-hand side, and you can navigate into your assets this way. I must admit that I almost never use this. I typically use my assets panel. And if I want to find controls, I've just got into the habit of searching for them. So if I want to find a button or something, I just go and search for a button. I find the button that's in that category selected there. I also find all the other controls in other categories that have the word button in them. The other thing that I find useful in here is something that Visual Studio doesn't really have, I don't think, which is this notion of locations. So you can see these are all the possible assemblies of controls that Blend knows about. And so I could just pick one of these and I can see all the controls that live in that assembly versus that assembly versus that assembly. And sometimes I find that a really useful way of trying to think, I've just referenced an assembly. I know there's a control in there. What's it called? And I can just click on the assembly and see the controls that come from that particular assembly. So I sometimes find that useful as well. So let's pop that back over there. I'm just going to collapse him down a little bit. And then, of course, let's just go draw something out onto our artboard. So let's just go take a button over here. Let's just drag him out onto the artboard. We'll come back to him in 1 second. Perhaps a quick word about the artboard whilst we're here. So the artboard is obviously where you lay stuff out, design it, and so on. It's very kind of flexible, very easy to use. You'll notice at the moment that the little crosshairs cursor is out there. That means if I use the mouse, I'm going to draw another button. Sometimes I don't want to draw another button. I want to select things, which you can do by grabbing the selection tool up here or very easily just hitting the V key and you move into selection mode. So it's always kind of handy to toggle between V and escape to get yourself into selection mode. The artboard is zoomable, so we can zoom in, we can zoom out just with the mouse wheel here. By the way, when you're working with these windows in Blend, Blend has this notion of workspaces. So we've laid out a couple of windows right now. And what we could do is save that window layout as a workspace and recall it at a later state. Visual Studio doesn't really do this. It just implicitly does it for you in a couple of different scenarios, whether you are in the debugger or whether you're just in the code editor. Blend makes this explicit. So you could say, I like this window configuration. Please save it for me as a workspace. And you'll notice that I've got a few workspaces set up here. I've got design, which lays the windows out like that. I've got animation, which lays the windows out like that. I've got another one that I set up, which lays the windows out like that. Oh, it looks like the same. There we go. And I've got another one that lays them back to where we are kind of right now. So you can always set up the windows the way you want them on all your different monitors and then just save that configuration. It's quite a useful thing to be able to do. Going back to the artboard, we can zoom this thing and zoom it out. At any time, you can always hit the F9 key to take away the adorners on the artboard, which can sometimes let you see exactly what you're looking at. And when you're zooming in and out, the most handy keys to remember kind of in here are Control-0, which will zoom to the whole content and make it fit perfectly into the space that you've got. And if you do have a selection, you can always hit Control-9, and that will zoom to that particular selection. So Control-0, Control-9 is really useful for just... Sorry, I don't want to give you some kind of fit at this time of the morning, but you can just kind of zoom in and out. It's really kind of useful. The other key to always remember is that, and this is one that always throws you if you're a Visual Studio developer, if you hit F4 in Visual Studio, what do you get? Properties window. If you hit F4 in Expression Blend, what do you get? Not the properties window. All the windows disappear. So this can freak you out because you go, properties, oh. Anyway, you can also use the tab key to do the same thing, but it just gives you more space. So tab and control zero, and now I've got a lot of space. Tab and control zero, and now I'm back into a reduced environment. Just kind of handy to be able to do those kinds of things. The other shortcut key I'll talk about, if you've got something that's got text, if you hit the F2 key, you can always change the text on that particular item. Let's just control 9 on that so you can see that. So F2 is kind of handy for quickly editing text. The other way of editing properties, of course, is with the properties window. So let's just pop over to the properties window over here. And the properties window is really, really functional in Blend. It's categorized, as you can see. Lots of different categories there. You can easily name things from here. So if I want to call this button Foo, then we've named that button up there. And one thing to bear in mind is that if you're looking at sections like layout here, a couple of things here. One is always remember that there might be properties that someone has cunningly hidden from you behind this little drop-down. And quite often I will scratch my head looking for a property and realize it's hidden away behind that drop-down. So always remember to expand things. And always remember to search. So if you're going to search, I want width properties, for instance. I can just easily search. I want alignment properties. I want margin properties. I can just very quickly search. And I spend a lot of time searching there. The other thing that I'll say is that there is in Blend one of the most innocuous looking pieces of UI I've ever seen. And it's this little white dot over here. It's let's just see if I can zoom into the little white dot for you. So here's the little white dot. This is the thing called the advanced options area. And this little button raises a menu. Let me just zoom back out of that. And behind this menu lurks a whole world of goodness. And if you didn't know about it otherwise, it does seem a little bit hidden. But this thing opens up a whole bunch of additional functionality around resources, around data binding, and so on. And we'll use it as we go along in the session. But don't ever forget the advanced options button over there. It's really, really vital to know that that thing is there. The other thing about the properties window here is it does also support the notion of events. So we have an events tab just over here on the right-hand side. And you can always go and just, you know, double-click, for instance, on an event and drop into the code editor. Now, the code editor in Blend, what can we say about the code editor in Blend? It's a kind of functional code editor. You know, so this is a perfectly functional code editor. I've got things like... IntelliSense, I've got things like statement completed, so I can go and do stuff like that, and add event handlers and so on. But really, in reality, it just isn't as good as Visual Studio. So what I find is if I want to write two or three lines of code, I might do it very quickly in Blend. Typically, I don't. Typically, I have Visual Studio and Blend open at the same time. If I want to write code, I do it in Visual Studio. If I want to do work on the artboard and in the designer in Blend, I go back to Blend. That's how I usually work. But remember, there is a code editor in here, so you do have a code editor. You know, it's better than code editors we'd have been using 10 years ago, but it's not Visual Studio 2010 SP1. That's just kind of the fact of life. Just remembering, on the artboard, of course, there is a split view, which gives us the XAML, and there's also just a plain old angle bracket XAML view as well, if you need that. And there are certain files, of course, in a solution like this, like, for instance, let's just go back to our project. If we open up app.xaml, there is no design experience for that, so the only way you can really work with it is in the XML editor. So you can always pop into a XAML-based view, sometimes when you've got a design view, sometimes when you haven't. Let's talk a little bit about layout, because we spend a lot of our time laying things out, and Blend is really strong in terms of layout. So let me just bring back in the designer there. If I want to lay stuff out, of course, I could delete my button. Let's go and find ourselves, for instance, a stack panel. So we'll take a stack panel, we'll drag it out onto the design surface. It got a little bit big. And let's just find its properties just so that you can see it and give it a background. Nice pink. And in terms of laying this stuff out, let's say that we want to add a few buttons into here. So we just go and grab some buttons, grab them into my stack panel, and just double-click them in there. And then, of course, I can just go maybe select that stack panel. Now, another window that comes into play here is the object and timeline window. And if you're from a Visual Studio world, this is really analogous to the document outline in Visual Studio. Although, to be fair, this is much more powerful in Blend than the document outline is for Silverlight or WPF in Visual Studio. You can do quite a lot of stuff with this window. These panels, of course, can be docked all around the environment. We can move them. I'm just going to dock this one down here, just to kind of let it coexist with the assets panel. And let's take our stack panel there and just select it, so you can see we're now zoomed in onto that stack panel. And there's many, many properties in Silverlight that contribute to layout. So we have properties like width, height, alignment, and margin. So, of course, I can always just go and align these in different ways, just pick those out, play around with that kind of stuff. And from a Blend perspective, I can take any kind of layout container like we have on the screen here, the stack panel, and I can just right mouse, and I could change it. So I could change this into a grid or a canvas or whatever I want. So I just change it, and now it's a grid. And Blend tries to do smart things in order to preserve the layout for a grid layout over and above what we had as a stack panel layout. The alternate approach, if we just delete the grid for a moment, is we can just go draw controls. Let's just go grab ourselves a button, draw one there, draw one there. Let's take ourselves a grid, and we can just easily go and just grab a grid. Oh, sorry, we just take a selection. Let's just select with the V key, swipe those two things, and we can just right mouse and group into a grid, for instance. And so now we've got a grid that surrounds those elements. We can zoom into that grid. And in terms of laying these out, if you look at what's gone on here, the solid line here indicates that Blend has given this an explicit margin. So we've got an explicit margin of 119 there. But at the bottom here, it's given it a width. So it's actually, it's given it a height. So there's no margin down here. I could change this to a margin. With a margin, of course, as we resize the grid, the button is going to resize. Whereas if we go back to the grid and change this to heights, then, of course, as we resize the grid, the button is not going to resize. It's just going to stay exactly where it was. One of the things I find really, really useful in Blend is this right mouse over here, auto size, width, height, and then especially fill. And the reason why I find fill really useful is you often end up in scenarios where Blend has created margins that you did not want. Auto size fill takes them all away, resets the alignment, resets the margin. It's one button that just makes everything really quite easy. There is a comparable button in Visual Studio, actually, as it happens, but I just find that to be a really, really useful thing to be able to do in terms of layout. Of course, the most flexible layout system is a grid, which is what we have here. Let's just draw another grid. Let's get rid of that one. Let's take out another grid here. And a few words about building grids in Blend. Obviously, we can go and just mark out grid columns, grid rows, and so on. When you want to select particular columns or rows, you select sort of just near them. And then very importantly, you change their sizing by using either the padlocks here or by using the layout over here. This properties section is now for the particular column that we've got selected. And a word of warning, you know, I said earlier on that you'll sometimes find properties are hidden. I can almost guarantee that at some point in your life, if you use Blend, you will find a column or a row not behaving the way you expect. And it will be because somebody, probably the tool, set a minimum width or a minimum height on that particular row or column. And you can see this little sneaky guy here. From time to time, you need to reset that if something has gone as set. So, you know, we can very easily just set these proportionally just by shift selecting them and then setting them to be star width and just set that to 1, for instance. It's very, very easy to set that up. Or I could change this first column here just to size itself to the content just by setting that to auto. And because there's no content in there, it just disappeared, and that's kind of how that works. So layout, very important. A thing that perhaps you won't do so much of, but certainly I use it from time to time in Blend, is Blend's ability to draw. So let's just get rid of this. There's a couple of drawing tools in Blend. You have the pen over here, and you have the pencil. If we take the pen, what this allows you to do is draw sort of bezier curves and create shapes. Let me just make the artboard a bit bigger. So what we can do is just simply go ahead and create shapes that way. By the way, whilst Blend can draw, it doesn't give you any ability to draw if you don't already have that ability. So if you're somebody like me, you can just create these sort of abstract-looking shapes and then wonder what it is you're actually doing. Generally speaking, I don't really work with the raw drawing tools like this. Once you've got this, by the way, what you're creating is a path object from the point of view of Silverlight. Once you've got one of these, you can be sort of kind of, let's make that go away. Go and get my pen back. Select that guy. And let's get my pen back. We can always go and add points into the shape. We can always grab the selection tool and manipulate those points, start to play around with it, really create something quite beautiful. Generally speaking, I don't kind of work that way. What I often find myself doing is something along the lines of taking existing shapes, maybe simple ones like these. And let me just give those a quick fill so that you can actually see them. Let's just go and bring in a brush over here, make that blue or something. Make the other one blue. And normally what I find myself doing is something along the lines of simply taking shapes and using something like combine. So there's different ways in which we can combine those shapes to make more interesting shapes. So if I unite them, we've now made one shape out of those two things. And we can still go and grab points and so on and add points into that shape and manipulate it, dragging this out here, something like that. We can still use things like that. Once you've got different shapes, you can always go and fill, and Blend has a whole range of options around filling things in and creating brushes. We can create solid brushes, as you see. We can create gradient brushes just by manipulating the gradient stops. And Blend has a nice brush tool over here that will let you play with that, maybe alter the direction, maybe alter the particular points. Maybe alter the end point down there, drag it out. So Blend's got nice tools for creating brushes like so. We could switch it to a radial brush and do it that way and then just drag the radius out. And it also has nice tools for working with images. So if I want to create an image brush, I can just come to the image section here and I can just pick myself an image. So let's just go to somewhere like the wallpaper. I've got some images, pick an image. And Blend straight away goes and inserts that as a resource, creates an image brush from it, and paints that area with that image for me, which is just a kind of nice thing to do. I think Visual Studio kind of does that as of Visual Studio 2010 as well. It can also create brushes like that. Okay, so let me close this down. Excuse me?
The table you have, the grid. Mm-hmm.
How do you insert rows? Well, kind of the same way that you did it with columns. So if you want to insert rows into the grid, was the gentleman's question. How would I take a grid and put a bunch of rows into the grid then naturally? And then just set the properties on those things for how you want them to size. Well, yeah, so there's not an insert row button. It's essentially just drawing another row. And if Blend had content in there, what it will try and do is, if you had content in that row when we inserted it, it would put it across the two rows, and then you would have to set the definition of that content's row span back to 1 to move it back into the row it was in. Yeah? Okay, so kind of a quick whirlwind around the environment. Let's drill into some other areas. Let's drill into things that I think Blend has specific capabilities for that you don't see quite so much of inside of the Visual Studio environment. So I picked a few things out here. We'll talk a little bit about resources. We'll talk about styles. We'll maybe talk a little bit about control templating, animation, but I won't really talk about animation in isolation. We'll perhaps talk about it in the world of visual states. And we'll talk a little about behaviors and perhaps data, although I might push data into the follow-on section where we'll build up something that uses some data. Have some data for the follow-on section, so perhaps we'll do that there. So take a breather, and we'll pop back over to Blend again. And let's make a new project, so we're starting clean. It's kind of nice to always start kind of clean. And let's just zoom that down to bottom there. And let's talk about this notion of resources, because Blend's really strong with resources. It does some really nice things around resources. And in Silverlight, a resource can be anything. It's useful to use visual things just because you can see them, but they don't have to be visual things. But let's go back to what we were doing. Let's take a simple shape like a rectangle or something. Let's just draw that out onto the artboard. And let's give it some kind of color. We've made it a nice blue. And it's important to realize that what we're doing there is we're absolutely just setting that fill of that rectangle to a hard-coded value. And that's not great from the point of view of wanting to reuse that value somewhere else in the application, and it's also not great from the point of view of being able to change it if you wanted some notion of theming or something like that. It's not too clever to really work that way. And so what we can do in Blend is go and change that value into a resource. So this hangs off the little advanced button here, and we can convert that to a new resource. So we say, let's convert it to a new resource, and Blend says, where would you like to put this resource? Would you like to put it globally into your app.xaml? Would you like to put it locally into this document, or would you like to create a new resource dictionary to put it in? So for the moment, let's just go and put it into this document. Let's say, okay, let's put it here. So we okay that. And a couple of things just happen. You'll notice that a new tab opened up in the brushes section. Because it was a brush resource, we've got a special section here for resources of type brush. And here is that brush. It's available there. Something else happened that is incredibly subtle. Possibly too subtle. Let me try and zoom in on this a little bit. If you notice, our advanced options button went from white to green. Now, of course, you were born knowing that what green means is local resource, whereas white means local value. You knew that already. It's intuitive. It's obvious. But I had to learn it. Anyway, so that's what that means. It is significant, the color of these things. So it's changed to green, saying this is coming from a resource, and you can see which resource it is. It's brush one. That kind of makes sense. The other thing that comes into play is that, of course, from a XAML perspective, we just change this thing to use a resource. You know, so we're using a resource, static resource, and it's gone undefined that. So that's just from a XAML perspective. The other thing that comes into play here is the resources window in Blend. So we can bring up the resources window. And there are kind of two views of this resources window. What it's showing you at the moment is all the resources in kind of the files that I've got open right now, or the files that are relevant to my situation. So you can see at the moment we've got app.xaml with no resources. We've got mainpage.xaml, which contains a user control, which defines this resource here, brush one. And so that's where that thing is defined. The other view of our resources here is show me the resources in use by the selected item. So if we kill the selection and bring it back, you can see that this rectangle is using one resource, which is the brush that we've got on the screen. We can always go and edit that resource here. So for instance, if we were to go back and create another rectangle, let's just do that. That rectangle is also using that brush, and so if we change the resource to some red value, you know, we've got central inline editing for that resource here. We can just change it to some really nasty brown value that we've got there. And that's fine. We can just go and do that. But what if I wanted, for instance, let's say we went back to the project, and let's go and add a new item into the project, some other kind of user control. Let's just go with a user control there. And so we've got a new user control here, and perhaps what I want to do is draw out some kind of shape. Let's take a pie. So we've got a pie there on this control. Now notice when I go to its properties, I can't hit the brushes tab because that resource is not available inside this XAML file. It's not globally available. It's only locally available in the other XAML file. And if I look at the resources that I've got available here, I'm not seeing any resources that I can really use, so I'm a bit stuck. So let me go back to the other file. And what I could do is I could say, well, let's go back to the project. And let me just add a new folder here. Let's call this assets. And into this assets folder, let's just go and add a new item. And we'll make that a resource dictionary. So I'm bringing in a resource dictionary. Now notice when I do this, unlike Visual Studio, Blend automatically links that into my app.xaml. So it's linked app.xaml to that resource dictionary just automatically. And again, unlike Visual Studio, I can now take that brush, for instance, and drop it into that resource dictionary. So I kind of refactor my resources in here, just drag them around to where I want them. And because that's linked to app.xaml, that brush is now globally available, which means that if I go back to my other window, which was this guy here, then that brush is now available to me because it's now linked from app.xaml, so it's globally available. And it can even support, you know, dragging and dropping that brush onto here. And Blend says, what do you want to do? I want to set the fill. And then we've got that resource in use over there. The other thing to say is that Blend does nice things around adding existing resources. So you might be thinking, well, this is all a bit toy. I don't really need this to deal with this one brown brush that we've just created. What do I need all this functionality for? If I use some existing assets, so let's just go and add existing items here. Let's pop out to my desktop and find some assets. These assets come from a style you can get on the internet. It's called Jetpack, and it's a whole bunch of resources you can download and install. And so I bring that in, and once again, in the resource view, you can see that app.xaml is now linked to those three extra files. So that just kind of comes in. And if you notice, let's just go back over to there. For instance, in terms of the brushes that I've now got available to me, it's quite a lot of brushes. And so being able to have this resource view and being able to understand where resources come from, so let's just change that resource, for instance, over there, and being able to look at this and say, where am I using resources on this particular page and what resources have I got available to me? And in the properties panel, show me all the brushes I've got available to me. Becomes quite useful. It becomes quite powerful. It becomes something that you want to do when you've got kind of real-world sets of resources, large sets of resources that you want to manipulate. The other thing to say about resources, it's not all about brushes, of course. You know, we can always go and use something else. So let's say insert something like a text block here. Sorry, that's a text box. Let's have a text block. Just move him over there. We're going to have to zoom a little bit to grab him. I think his text is currently white. So we've got our text over there. And we can set up resources around that. So, you know, if, for instance, I wanted to find the font size, for instance, let's say change the font size to 16. I can make that into a new resource if I want to. Or in fact, when I brought in my resources just a moment ago, I brought in a whole bunch of font sizes. So there's font size 2. Notice that everything goes green because we're now using a particular resource. I can just pick those things out. So working with resources is really powerful here. The thing I'd say is I wouldn't typically work with resources in isolation like this. I'd be typically bundling them into styles. And once again, style editing is something that Blend supports natively, and Visual Studio doesn't really support other than you typing styles into a XAML editor. So let's take a look at styles. Let's make a new project here, just to clear everything up. Let's not save any of that. And so as we're working with something like text or whatever it might be, let's just take a text block again, grab that guy. Did we end up with a rich text box? Oh, no, we ended up with a date picker text box. I don't think I want to style one of those. Let's go and bring in a text block. Let's not deviate. So as we're working with one of these, and you can see the limitations of a low screen resolution here, I wouldn't typically change its font and its font size and its foreground and so on and so forth in isolation as separate resources. I would typically put them into a style. And so one of the things we can do in Blend is just go and edit the style of this thing. In this case, creating an empty style. Let's create one. Blend says, where do you want to put it from a resource perspective? I'll just let it go into this document. And then this is one of the areas which I think in Blend is quite confusing. Not much changes in the UI here. So there's not a whole bunch of stuff that changes. But if you look at what we've got, it's kind of subtle, really. Over here, just trying to zoom in here. This little area here, and of course this, and up here, this little area here. This indicates that the property changes you are now making are not just property changes, you are building a style. You are effectively in the style editor. It's just that Blend doesn't show you much more than these two symbols to indicate that you're in the style editor. So as you're changing values here, just looking at it from a XAML perspective, we are building a style now. And so if we go and get our text block, and we change its font size to be whatever we want, 24, notice that we're building a style with a setter down here. And if we change the font to be a different font, and if we change the foreground to be some different foreground, we're building a style. We are not changing properties on that text box anymore, that text block anymore. It's a style we're putting together. If we come out of style editing by just clicking up there on the artboard, let me just zoom that down for you and move back to XAML view. Of course, the text box is using that style, and if we find its style property, you can see it is using that style. We could always reset it, and that would take that style away from it. But notice something about local values here. So let's say, for instance, let's copy this text block and paste it. Just zoom out. There's our second text block down there. And let's imagine this one, I want it to be, for instance, find another color, maybe some kind of bluey, purpley color. Now, notice that the little box has gone white because this is now a local value. But we've preserved the essence of the style. We've still got the font. We've still got the size. And interestingly, if we reset this from a Blend perspective, it goes back to picking up the value from the style. It doesn't go back to the default value, which would probably be black. So reset means back to the style, effectively. It resets back to the style. It's just kind of how styles work, really, in Silverlight. Does that kind of make sense? Yeah? And so just remember that once you wander in, again, we can go back in, of course, edit that style. That's the current style. We can come back out. We can go to our resources over here. We can find that style. We can right mouse. We can edit that style. We're editing the style at that point. We're not just setting properties on a text block. We're building up properties into a style. Let's come back out of that thing. Quite often when you're using styles, it's in order to work with templates. And of course, one of the features of Blend that you get that doesn't show up in Visual Studio is around control templating, and also additional sort of expressivity, additional power around data templating. Blend is pretty strong on templating, whereas Visual Studio largely leaves it alone. What I mean by largely leaves it alone is if you want to do it in Visual Studio, you will just type a lot of XML, and it will take you quite a while. That's really what I mean by leaves it alone. So let's have a look at templating. Let's just go and make another project to be clean. We've got a nice new project. Let's not save on that. And there's a couple of things I want to talk about here. One is around animation. And I find that I rarely use animation in Blend from the point of view of, hey, I want to spin this thing around, or hey, I want to animate this text box from over there to over there. I find myself very rarely doing that. You can sit and create custom animations in isolation in Blend, but I find myself not mostly doing that. I normally find myself using animation within visual states. So I normally find using animation to drive state transitions. So we'll try and show animation in state transitions. To do that, let's just look a little bit at control templating. So let's drop into, say, a checkbox here. Let's just insert a simple control checkbox. Let's zoom it up. And we can wander in Blend and edit that controls template. So either from this menu or from the main menu over here, or even I think from the right mouse menu somewhere down there, we can edit the template that makes that up. Generally speaking, I start from editing copies of templates because it allows me to see what was already there. Starting with a blank canvas can be more difficult. So we edit a copy of this checkbox's template. We get a choice as to where to put it. And what we just did was another one of those transitions inside of Blend. We just moved into template editing mode. And once again, it's not really as explicit as I'd like it to be. So I think somebody's dinner's ready. So is it breakfast? So the template editing here, it's not obvious really, but the signifier is here and down here that we are editing the template. And you'll notice that the object and timeline panel has changed its display. This is not my main UI anymore. This is the template of the checkbox. So the checkbox is made up of a staggering array of different UI elements, just for a simple control like this, a grid that lays stuff out, background, and so on and so forth. Lots of different bits and pieces, including some bits and pieces that, you know, perhaps even experienced Silverlight developers don't expect, like the validation tooltips and so on. The other window that comes into play once you wander into these templates is the states window in Blend. And over here, for our particular checkbox, the states window is showing us all the states that the checkbox defines and understands. So, for instance, the most obvious one, the checked state, the unchecked state, the I'm not so sure state. I have no idea how you drive a checkbox into I'm not so sure from the UI. You can do it from code, but you can't do it from the UI. The normal state, the mouse over state, the press state, the disable state, and the invalid states that you might have seen on validation routines and so on. So all of these states are represented as well. Again, this is stuff that Visual Studio doesn't do. It leaves you really with a XAML editor at this point. And so let's just retemplate this checkbox very quickly. Let's get rid of, what should we get rid of? Let's get rid of everything pretty much. So we'll take it back to its default, and in fact, that grid I'm even going to get rid of. And we can start from the scratch and just say, let's go and make ourselves another grid, perhaps. Let's just go and chuck a grid in here. So my template's going to start with a grid. And just a kind of tip of something I find myself using, you can get into some funnies around working with templates until you've got their widths and sizes set up properly. So what I often do is just give this thing an explicit width and height, which Blend has done already. I probably won't want that when I'm finished, but it's kind of handy just from a design perspective to give it an explicit width and height so we don't get into funny layout issues. For my particular checkbox here, let's just go and build it around, we'll make it look like a traffic light. I stole some traffic light imagery off the internet. So let's just bring that in. Blend can import Photoshop and Illustrator files, so I went out and searched for some Photoshop files. And if we just go back to my desktop, let's just grab those. So Blend imports this. This dialogue is great at 1024 because it doesn't quite fit on the screen, but I think if we just do... maybe not. There it is. Stop. Okay. And so this Photoshop file just has some simple layers in it, so I'm just going to bring in a red, amber, and green traffic light. Bring those in. Blend tries to be helpful and thinks that I actually want those in my main scene. In fact, I didn't. So I'm just going to pop out of the template, delete that, and pop back into the template on this checkbox, which is currently blank, as you can see. We'll wander back into that template. But what Blend did do was inserted three PNGs for me. I'm going to name them because otherwise I'm going to get confused. That's green. And that one is... what is that one? Amber is what we call that. No, get off. I'm trying to rename you. I'm not trying to insert the thing. There. And maybe this one... can I rename that, please? Thank you. Okay, so I've got my three different images over there. Let's just insert them into the scene here. So I'll kind of put red, perhaps, at the back. I'll put amber in the middle and green at the front. They're not sizing themselves very well, so one of the most common things we're ever doing in Blend is sizing stuff. I think I said before, it's kind of handy just to tell them to do that, and that would be kind of nice. And perhaps in this particular case, they're not stretching particularly nicely, so let's say uniform. And then they're stretching a little bit more nicely. Now, at the moment, my traffic light, my checkbox is always green, which is, might be good, but it's not really a working checkbox. So let's just take the amber and green elements and just change the visibility so they're not there. And then it looks red, but now it's always red, so that's not any good either. What we want to do, of course, is model the states. So, and what we want to say is that in the check state, for instance, let's take the green image and let's just make it visible. And let's go back to the states, and let's say in the intermediate state, let's take the amber image, and let's just make it visible. And so back in states now, you can see we've got unchecked, checked, indeterminate. So very, very simple. If you want to, you can have all kinds of fun and games here defining transitions between these states. So we could set a transition time here of, say, half a second. We could set an effect. And this is where really developers start to do things that designers wouldn't do. We can sort of say, hey, why not have a kind of Star Trek ripple in between the two? And if we switch on transition preview, oh. And this is where the designer will take the tool back off you. But it looks great. It ripples. Now, the interesting thing about this is that in truth, certainly in the UK, traffic lights don't really work like this, I don't think. They, you start off unchecked. And then I think when you go checked, it doesn't go straight to green. It goes through the amber state on the way through. And it's kind of an interesting idea. So we can model that. We can actually go and affect the specific transitions. So we can go, when we're going from unchecked to checked, for instance, what we can do here is edit the animation. So let's just go into some kind of animation workspace. And let's find that particular animation. This one here. And then we can play around with it. So what we could say is, well, maybe at sort of half a second here, let's take our, hoping this is our amber image that we've got in the middle here, because Blend's named them since the last time I was here. And let's say, okay, at half a second here, let's make that one visible. And there he is. And then let's say at about 1 second, let's take this one and make him visible. But we probably want to take that one. And maybe just afterwards we could make him invisible again. Is that going to work? Yeah, that'll probably work. No, actually want to do it afterwards, don't we? Let's move that afterwards. Come here. Perhaps back down. Let's come out of... Oh, and by the way, so another one of these visual things in Blend. This little red square and the dot here means we are in animation recording mode or state transition recording mode. All property changes that you make here are actually part of the animation. Again, this is not enough of a visual cue for me. I would prefer that the whole environment went bright red and flashed, but it doesn't. And you will find yourself from time to time making changes in animation mode when you thought you were making them in regular mode and vice versa. You can switch it on and off here with this little toggle button. You can switch it on and off in the... where is it? Well, perhaps you can't, but you can switch it on and off there. No, I'm lying. You can switch it off on and off down there in the little object and timeline window. And we can go back from our animation workspace. Let's go back to our design workspace. And let's try out those states again. Ah, we went in that workspace. We were in that workspace. Let's try out those states again. So now as we go unchecked to checked. Yeah, maybe. Let's try it actually... running. So we set an explicit width and height on this thing at the start of this template, which I now want to lose. Let's just go and say, actually, you are automatically sized. Let's come out of that template and go back to the design surface. And we should have a reasonably resizable checkbox that hopefully if we were to run it would actually work. Let's have a look. Ah, beautiful. Oh. I'll just be a couple of hours here. It's a ripple you're applauding, isn't it? Okay. So the other thing I would naturally do here is probably start to introduce the data window over here. But what I thought I'd do, looking at the time, is let's go back over to there and switch into our last section, which is trying to put some of these things together. So I'll bring the data window into this section, and we'll try and put sort of a screen together. We'll get as far as we get. You'll probably see me struggle a bit at 1280 by 720, but we'll try and bring in a library from Visual Studio and try and put a screen onto something that's coming from a developer. So let's go back over to Blend, and let's make a new project, because this one's full of traffic lights. And let me just show you, in Visual Studio over here, I've written some code. Probably easiest to explain with this diagram. Let's just bring that up. And this just drops into a class library. Let's just zoom that down a little bit. And really, this is around a sort of shopping idea. It's very, very simple. What we have is this shopping cart view model, and it's by far the main object here. And your shopping cart view model, what you have is a collection of available products that you can buy. And each product has categories and names and summaries and images and so on. And there's also a notion of which product you've currently got selected, so that's there too. And then you've got a sort of shopping basket of the products that you've purchased. And for each product you've purchased, we've got the quantity and the product. So what have you bought? We've also got a total spend, which is how much money have you spent so far. And then finally, the products are actually stored in this little XML file. I stole them from somebody on the internet. And when the object model starts up, it doesn't load that XML file by default. You have to tell it to load it. So we've got this command which will load the products. And we've also got another command, and that command will purchase the currently selected product. So whatever product you've got selected, it purchases it and puts it into your shopping basket at that point. You'll notice it's a cunningly designed site, and it doesn't let you take anything out of the basket. So I thought that was quite a good feature. You buy it, you're bought. It's done. So let's have a look at that in Blend. Let's see what we could do with it. So I'm just going to go to my project over here, and let's just add a reference to that library. So we'll go out to my desktop, and let's just go and find that library. We bring it in, and Blend's got that reference. I'm also going to add those assets again that I used previously. So let's add a new folder, assets. And into that assets folder, let's add existing items. And we'll just go out to the desktop again, and I've got some assets in here. Notice I'm bringing in a PNG file and some resources from a XAML perspective. Let's just select all those. And Blend will do the right thing with those. And so what I would do is start to think about data. And if I want to design something around that model that I just showed you, there's two ways that I would work with this, given this particular model. One is to create real data. So what I can do is create an object data source here and create an instance of my shopping cart view model that I just showed you. And I've just realized that this dialog does not fit on this screen. So let's hit return and hope that it does the right thing. And it does. Great. So that's just created real data for me. And what I want to do is take that view model and set that as the data context for my control over there. But that's only going to work at runtime, so I also want to do something at design time. So Blend also supports the notion of design time data. Now, in all honesty, if you go down the route of new sample data, that gives you full control over the data that's produced, and I kind of find that most useful. But you have to do a whole bunch of typing that I don't really want to do now. It would take us 20 minutes to set up the data that way. So what I can do is say, create sample data from my class and pick that shopping cart view model again and hit return on that dialog. And what I want to do with that view model is I want to set it as the design time data for my form. And if I hit the Alt key, I don't know whether that's visible to you, it's going to set the design time data context. And so I've now set the design time data context of my form. Let's start to work on our form a little bit. We just brought in some resources. So if we go to properties over here on that particular grid, let's go and find a brush for the grid. We brought in resources, so let's just pick one. That will do. Let's start to lay things out. I'll have a little title at the top. I'll have some buttons at the bottom. And I'm going to have a grid, in fact, in the middle here, which we'll come back to in a moment. I'm just going to lay that out in that area. And that particular grid, if we just auto-size it, I want it to have three columns, and I'm going to auto-size or star-size, actually, those columns, just so they're all the same width. So we've kind of got those set up. Watching out, of course, always for minimum widths. So back on my layout here, I want to add a title to my application, so I just have a text block up here. We could use a label as well, I guess, so let's just add a text block up here. And I already kind of have a style for this set up the way that I showed you earlier on, so I can apply a style to it. Main heading style will do. And that adds just a font size and a drop shadow and various other bits and pieces. I didn't show you where you would add things like drop shadows. It's on the effect. So you can just go and easily add effects. And if you add an effects library, you could add more effects into there. Let's change the text of this with F2. Let's call it shopping demo, something like that, and that gets in there. And then I also want a little checkbox at the top here. So let's take a checkbox, and we'll just find one of those. And I'm just going to move him. So let's find his layout. I want him to be aligned. Let's just align him over on the right and in the middle. And I actually don't want him just to have a piece of text in there. I want to put an image in there, which I brought in a moment ago. It's this image here for a shopping basket. And let's just resize that image, so let's find its properties. I'll just set it to be maybe 48 by 48, perhaps. Okay. And I want to put the image into the checkbox as its content, so it's over there in the checkbox. And in fact, I don't want the little tick mark on there. I just want the image. The image is the checkbox, as far as I'm concerned. And a little trick, if you've not seen this before, is just to take the checkbox. And you can't do this, I don't think, in the UI. But I could just say template equals, if I could see what I was typing, x colon null. And the template goes away off that checkbox and it just displays the button over there. The image, rather, is what I'm trying to say. I want this row here to auto-size itself, so let's just say auto-size, and now it's sizing to the content that we've got. That's kind of nice. At the bottom of the screen here, I want to have another text block. So let's have another text block over here. I can't type. We'll have another text block over here. I'm just going to select him. I can hardly see him. Drag him down here. Come on, down here. That's it. And again, I want to align him over on the right and in the middle. And I have no idea what those margins are doing, so let's just reset them and zoom back out. He's over there. This is going to be the total amount of money you've spent, and I've got a little style for it somewhere, so let's just apply a resource, price style number one, to just give it some color and so on over there. And then finally, as I said, I want some buttons. Or actually, not really finally, but for this moment. Let's put them into a stack panel. Let's take that stack panel. Let's drag him down here. Once again, let's reset his layout. I'm being a bit sneaky here because I've put the stack panel and the text block in the same grid row. They could clash. In my situation, they won't, but they could, really. That might be a bit naughty. And let me just put some buttons in here. So we'll add a button and a button. And let's change that stack panel so that its orientation is horizontal, not vertical. Let's take those two buttons and just give them a little bit of margin. Maybe three. And let's just change the text on these buttons. So this one here can be load products. And this one here could be buy product. And let's change the font size because it's really hard for you to see. Boom, a bit better. I think I've got some templates actually for different colored buttons. So let's make this one blue. And let's make this one orange. Something like that. Okay, we're getting sort of somewhere. I want to start to display my data. So let's first off just go ahead and in our central grid here, go back to data. Let's go to our data context down here. Let's see if we can select it. And let's take our available products. And I'm just going to take one aspect of them, like this name here, and drag it out over there. Now, the data that's displayed here is the design time data. It's the sample data that we created. It's not runtime data. I can kind of show you that in a second. Let's just auto-size that. Notice that this button is one that I use almost all the time. And it kind of fits into that space. And I suppose I can show you, if we press F5, let's just run this for a second. Oh, we need to sort out a sizing issue, and I've no idea what that thing is down there. Did I do that? Anyway, so you notice there's no data here. But we have got this load products button. What is that? Did I draw that? It's gone anyway, good. let's make sure we sort out our sizing issue. Let's just tell the whole UI here to auto-size. And then we'll have to change the design time size. So let's make that sensible. 1,000 by something or other. Okay, that's not too bad. So we changed the design time size. I'll have to zoom in and out a little bit for you in a minute. But we didn't have any data, but if we go back to our data over here, we should be able to take our command. We've got this command, load the available products. Let's just drag it over to that button. And while we're here, let's drag the purchase over to that button. And let's just run that again with F5, and we should be able to see that we are loading data perhaps at runtime. So we are loading data at runtime, as you see. Okay, makes sense? Let's go and work a little bit on this list box. I don't care for it too much right now. So let's take the list box, and firstly, let's change its background. So let's go to its properties over here, and let's just find a brush for it. So we'll find one of our resources. I don't really mind which one it is. That looks okay. And let's also go and edit the template of this. So now we're into editing a data template. And so we can wander in and say, edit the template. Sorry, edit the item template, and edit the current one, which Blend created for us and has just one text block in it, which is data bound, to the name of the product, because that was what we dragged out onto the design surface. So now we're editing the data template for every item that's displayed in that list box. And I didn't want a stack panel. What I wanted was a grid. So let's change that into a grid. And then this particular grid, once again, a bit of a trick for me is to change this to have an explicit width and height just while I design it. So let's say 192 by 96. And then let's zoom into it. And there's that grid, so I can now start to work on that and design it. On my data over here, there's a few things I want to display about my product. So I'm just going to have 1, 2, 4 rows. And as the gentleman was talking about earlier on, in doing that, Blend will have made, if we just search for grid here, that text block have a row span of 4. I don't want that. I want it at the top. So I'll just move it up so it spans just that one row. Okay, fine. So let me go and take that text block. This is my product name, so I'll just give it some kind of heading. Let's say heading 2. Let's style that up. And then what I want next is I want an image in here. So let's take an image. Just draw him out there. Not a lot of space for me to do this. I want the source of this image to be data bound. So let's find a source. Let's use the advanced options to data bind to the small image. So we've got that bound and set up there. I've also got a little style to apply to this, so let's just apply a style to that. And I want to make sure that this row here is auto-sizing itself. And I want to make sure that this row here is auto-sizing itself. Ooh, that didn't work very well, did it? I think my image is too big, perhaps. So let's just go back to my grid and make this height a little larger. Let's just see if I can say bigger, 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 bigger while I design it. Okay, fine. Let's go back to our image and see if we can... Ooh, look at that. Reset that. Mm-hmm. Reset that. My image is not playing with me at the moment. Just bear with me while I make it play. Auto-size that row. Thank you. That's nice. Okay, so that's great. And then I also have in my data over here a price. So let's take the price and drop it into this row. Let's style it with a style we've already got for a price. And I want to align it differently. So let's just find its properties. And let's say you align over on the right, maybe in the middle. You don't need all those funny margins. And let's take that grid row now and auto-size that. So that's kind of fine. And the last thing I want displayed over here is a summary around my product. So let's take that and drag it out here. Let's just auto-size it in both directions. And again, I have a style for that, for my descriptions. And I want that to be able to take all the remaining space, so it's star size, so that should be kind of okay, that should kind of work. This price over here, I'd wanted to display as a currency. You can't get to the string format binding in Expression Blend, which is a bit naughty. So what I would do is just drop into XAML here. I'd find that binding and simply say, string format equals, C for currency. And so if we pop back to design view, that should be now looking like a currency over there. So that's a little bit better than it was. Let's come out of this template for a moment, back into our main UI. And if you notice the template, it's got an explicit size on it. So that's not good, is it? Let's go back into the template. I left this with an explicit size. So let's just go and say auto size. But if you'll notice, they're all kind of different sizes, which is not good. They're not stretching nicely. And in Silverlight, this is because the list box has an item container style that controls the stretching. Blend makes that pretty easy to get to if we come out of the template for this. And on our list box, we say, edit additional styles, item container style. Let's put it somewhere. And then on there, this will have alignment properties where we can say stretch, stretch. And so we edit that and it now does the right thing. Let's see if our list box is loading. Let's run this. Got our sizing sorted, got products. So our list box is loading quite nicely. That's okay. This text block down here doesn't yet reflect what we've actually bought. So let's go and fix that text block while we're here. So let's just go to data again. Let's go to total spend and drop it onto... no, that's not going to work. Let's drop it onto the text block. Is that the right text block? Yes. It's because it's in that stack pile I'm struggling with. Let's just take that and drag it onto here. And we've bound it, but again, I don't just want a value like that, so I'm going to do a little hack on that binding again. So let's say string format equals total spend. Oh, sorry. Something like that. Okay, so that's better. We've got dollars and pence down there. And probably at this point, if we ran it, we should be able to see that as we are buying products. Ah, interesting. Why is that not working? Well, it's not working because our list box is not setting the selected product. So we need to make sure it sets the selected product. So let's bind that up. Let's go to the selected product over here. Drag it out onto the list box. Choose a property. I hit the shift key to choose a property there. And we say, I want to bind that to the selected value. And I want to do it in a two-way manner. Let's go back. Let's see if buying the product works. If it doesn't work, by the way, now, I have no more solutions. Ah, we're buying the products. That's working quite nicely. Let's buy one of those. Buy one of those. Okay, great. What I might want to do now is display some kind of product details in the middle of this grid. So let's take our parent grid here again. And let's say we want to display some details here. The details are actually remarkably like the summary we've got in that list box over there. So I can sneakily probably steal that grid that we built and just drop it in here. So let's see if we can do that. Let's go into this template. Let's edit that. Let's take that grid. Let's copy it. Let's come back to this grid, and let's paste it. And it's over there, and I want to move it over here. Maybe reset the layout on that. Mm-hmm, not so bad. The problem I've got is perhaps the image here, I actually want to use a different size. So let's say edit style, large image. And then I think this text here is bound to the summary information, I think, probably. Let's just go and have a look at that. Let's find its properties. Let's find its text. What are you data bound to? Ah, okay. I want this grid to be a sort of detail view for the list box. So I need to make sure I set up the data context on the grid. So let's just go over to the grid. There he is. And let's just get data. And let's make sure that he has the selected product as his data context. That should be better. Let me now go back to my text block there, this one here, and find its binding for text. And say, what are you data bound to? I want you bound to the details, not the summary is what I want. So that should be the details in there. And hopefully, if we rerun this thing at this point, let's load some products. So we've got details appearing in our details page now. It's all kind of nice. And let's just finish off and add our shopping basket over on the right-hand side. And all I want to do for that is go to data again. And we've got the purchased products here. So let's take that. Let's just take one aspect of it and drag it here. Just reset the layout on that. Let's set the background on that. Just find a background brush. Maybe one of that one. Yeah, that's fine. And you're probably thinking, oh, please don't retemplate another list box for me. So I won't do that. Let's just go and use the style I've already got. So one of the things I did was brought in a resource that we can use. And we kind of got that templated already. I have a feeling that both of these list boxes, though, at the moment are scrolling horizontally, which I don't want them to do. So let me just make sure they don't scroll anymore. Just disable that. And let's run this back up and make sure that we can load up products, buy a product, buy a few more. Ah, that one's not stretching, is it? We'll fix that in a minute. Let's buy, let's buy, let's buy, let's buy. And notice again, these items are not stretching, but we fix that for the other list box by editing its item container style. So let's use the same resource over there. Now those will stretch quite nicely. We've got that sorted out. Now, there's places where maybe I don't always want this shopping cart thing to be the shopping basket. I don't want the user to really see how much stuff they've bought. I'd like them just to keep buying. And so maybe I could hide that from time to time and move it off the screen. So let's look at how we could move it off the screen. Let's go to our grid here. And let's just add another column. And what I'll do is I'll take this list box and we'll move it into grid column 3. So it moves over there. And we'll take the central details pane and let's move that so it spans two columns. And then let's just be a little bit sneaky with grid column 3 here. Let's go back to the grid, find that column, and give it a width of 0. So we got rid of that part of the screen. Whilst I'm here, let me just reset the widths on these remaining columns because we've got a bit confused. So we've taken it off the screen for most of the time, but there are cases where we want to bring it back. So let's go to our states over here and define visual states. So let's add a couple of visual states. This one can be called hidden, and this one can be called shown. And in the shown state, what we want to do is bring that shopping cart back. So we go back to that list box. We go back to its properties. We move it into grid column 2. He's back. And we take the grid over here, and we move him into column span 1. He's gone back where he was before. So now we've got hidden and shown. And once again, we can get a bit artistic with this if we want to. We could have a little transition between the two. Let's just go ahead and switch on a little easing function to make it a little bit more funky. And so we just kind of snap that thing in and out. So it's kind of easy as we snap that thing in and out. Now, we might want to drive that off my little checkbox up at the top of the screen. So we've got that checkbox up there. So we can do that through use of behaviors. And I'm just realizing that I didn't talk about behaviors in the middle section. I should have talked about behaviors, and I kind of missed that bit out. Apologies for that. Blend has and ships with this notion of actions, triggers, and behaviors. And in the short time we have left here, I'll just say that they are packaged bits of code that do stuff. And you can associate them with visual elements, and you can write your own. One, for instance, would be this go to state action. And we could try and associate that with the checkbox we've got here. So let's just go and say, take the go to state action and associate it with that checkbox. And let's look at the properties of that particular go to state action. And we can say, what I want you to do is I want you to go to, let's say, the shown state. So that's the state transition it's going to drive. But I only want to do this when the checkbox is checked. And we can do that via Blend 4 with conditions. So we could say, let's add a condition. And the condition is such that we'll just say, when the checkbox is checked, that didn't work. What did I just do? Did we break it? Okay, what we do at this point, let's just open that back up because I have no idea what I just did to that file. So let's go back to our go to state action. Where's he gone? This guy here. Let's just find his properties again. And let's say, well, it looks like it did kind of work. When that is true, we want to go to that particular state. And let's add another go to state action. And in this one, we want to go to the hidden state, but we only want to do that when the checkbox is checked. Is false. Hopefully, if I set those up correctly, and I'm feeling I might not have done. Let's just see if we can. Yeah, okay, so that's driving quite nicely. So we can go and pick our item, get the shopping cart out, buy some products, buy some more products, put it away, get it back out. All working quite nicely, all working quite easily. Just lastly, because I've only got about 1 minute left here, another example of behaviors that can add a bit of visual pizzazz that you would spend many, many minutes working in Visual Studio to create. My master detail kind of thing that's working, maybe I want a bit of snap around that in the UI as well. So let's just use one more behavior. I won't explain this too much, but let's go back to our list box here and let's edit its panel template. So let's just create an empty panel there. And onto the stack panel we've got there, I'll just use a fluid move set tag behavior. I'll try and say what this does in a moment. I'll tell it to apply to the children and to pick up the data context. And then back in the main UI, on the grid that we've got, I'll tell that to use a fluid move behavior. And I'll tell it that it applies to itself. We'll give it a little transition. Probably too much transition as it happens, but we'll tell it how to pick things up. I'm not really explaining those. I'll try and explain them when we run this, assuming that it works nicely. So what happens is when we set the list box data context at that point, when we change the selected item, it picks up the data context of that item and sort of sets it up for tracking. And then on the grid, when its data context changed, we sort of realized that the element that was just selected in the list box and was tagged has just shown up in this grid over here. And so consequently, we can run that transition from A to B and just have that thing pop out from the UI, and kind of how that works. And it's all still kind of popping out nicely into the space that's available for it. So again, just a very, very simple thing that we added in there. Looking at the clock, we're bang out of time. I won't add any more to this. Hopefully that was a bit useful in cementing some of the things we looked at before. And apologies if we skipped some of the things we used there that we should have talked about on the way to that. But hopefully you get an idea. If you want more on expression, microsoft.com/expression. My general sort of takeaway for this session would be if you're working with Silverlight, you're working in Visual Studio 2010. And by the way, if you are working in there, you do want 2010 and you do want SP1. If you're not using Blend at all, but you have it available to you, my recommendation is try a bit more Blend. Use a bit more Blend. I find it very, very useful, and I typically work with both tools open, monitors allowing. I just find it really useful for some of the things that we looked at here. So I'd encourage you, pop to Expression, try Blend if you're not trying it today. Use it a bit more if you've been avoiding it. If you want to catch up with me, contact details are on the slide. I'll leave them up there if you want to write them down. Have a good day, enjoy the rest of the conference, and thanks a lot for coming along. Thank you.